This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Today marks the 145th anniversary of Juneteenth. June 19th is celebrated as an observance of African American Emancipation Day. In cities around the United States, it's a good time to celebrate emancipation from all forms of slavery, including the slavery of the mind. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. And as Annie Laurie said, this is the weekend of June the 19th. 2010.
Broadcasting out of Atlanta, Anchorage, Grand Rapids, Monterey. I met some of you Monterey listeners recently when I was in San Jose, and we're podcasting everywhere.
This show, Free Thought Radio, is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the national organization of atheists and agnostics, working very hard to keep religion and government separate. That's our main purpose, but we also work to educate the public about the views of the none of the aboves, those of us who are free from religion.
So we serve as a membership organization for atheists, agnostics, secularists. We have more than 16,000 supporters and more than 15,000 members.
And your support helps us with our educational efforts as well as our legal efforts in keeping religion and government separate.
And we're really pleased, speaking of legal efforts, to announce that later on the show we'll be speaking with a true legal expert, Professor Erwin Chemerinsky, Dean of the University of California Irvine School of Law. He'll be speaking with us, telling us his own story, actually, of how he came to examine the constitutionality of a very special privilege for ministers known as the Paris Exemption, and this is FFRF's newest federal lawsuit. It's in Sacramento. It's a sleeper. You're going to be reading about it because it's challenging the right of ministers to not exempt from taxes, but to avoid paying taxes on their housing allowances paid for them by churches, and it amounts into the whatever, millions and hundreds and thousands of millions of dollars.
And we don't need a joke for today's show because we have kind of an accidental joke, a strike by lightning. Here's a little inadvertent humor that was in the news this week.
Jesus is on fire. It's amazing. Hit the cross.
You may have caught the story Monday that a six-story tall statue, hard to imagine, of Jesus Christ, with his arms raised, which is along a highway, was struck by lightning in a thunderstorm, and it burned to the ground in what was called an act of God. The King of Kings statue is one of Southwest Ohio's most familiar landmarks. It stood there since 2004, along with the Evangelical Solid Rock Church. I guess the statue wasn't solid rock, along Interstate 75 in Monroe, that's just north of Cincinnati. The sculpture, 62 feet tall and 40 feet wide at the base, showed Jesus from the torso up and was nicknamed Touchdown Jesus because of the way the arms were raised, similar to a referee signaling a touchdown. No one was injured, fortunately, in this act of God, so-called. Travelers on Interstate 75 were often startled, of course, to come across this huge statue from the torso up on this roadside. The 4,000-member non-denominational church had spent $250,000.
Or $500,000, it said in one story.
$500,000? Yeah. To finance the Jesus statue. And here's some more of the news clips.
This morning, the King of Kings statue off of 75 is nothing but a twisted heap of metal. Officials say it was struck by lightning last night.
This is what it looked like to people driving by on Interstate 75 overnight. A 62-foot-tall statue at the Solid Rock Church covered in flames. Flames that stretched up to 100 feet into the air. Many members say there's no doubt in their mind God is trying to get their attention with this lightning strike.
And it's a sign from God that we need to learn something as Christians as a whole, that we're not doing something right.
It scares me. Like, it really does. I just think about what that symbolizes, and to me that's a sign, and not a good one.
Well, what century are we living in? Look at these church members, the fear in their voices. She says, it scares me. Just think about what it symbolizes. A lightning strike hit a bunch of poorly constructed metal, and the thing had a metal structure, but it was made out of wood and other types of very highly flammable stuff, and yet they're all thinking, oh, this is a sign. Suppose the lightning had hit our building and demolished our building. What would everybody say? They'd say, that's a sign that this is an evil people.
But God doesn't like us. But,
yeah.
but they're not saying that. But is it a sign that Ohio is full of sinners? What do they think? Is it a sign that maybe their God doesn't want them to spend this kind of money on silly statues?
Yeah, and if you look at the picture of it before and after, it's just a totally silly, kind of like a child's paper mache thing with this. It's from the torso up. And he's got his hands raised, and it's still six stories tall.
And I would think it would have been a little bit of a traffic hazard. And I love that this week a Roman Catholic priest in the Chicago Times blog criticized us, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, for daring to spend $10,000 on our unique bus sign campaign in downtown Chicago. But it's okay for a church to spend $250,000 or $500,000 on a giant Jesus statue?
Well, what if one of the buses with one of our signs gets struck by lightning? Well, then what will they say?
It won't, probably because of the rubber tires.
And by the way, if you are in Chicago planning to visit, look for one of those 75 king-size bus signs on downtown buses that say, sleep in on Sundays. Obviously, there are many reasons to reject religion, and most of them are intellectual. But face it, one of the most immediate benefits of quitting church, besides, as Steve Benson says, getting a 10% raise, because you can stop tithing, it's getting to sleep in on Sundays. What the world really needs is a good night's sleep.
And you've written a song saying that, haven't you?
I do. It's called the Sunday Morning Blues, about the church bells ringing. And, you know, Sunday's supposed to be the day of rest, so why not take that literally and sleep in?
And you know what you're speaking about, because you used to tithe churches, didn't you?
Well, I tithed 10% of my gross income for many years.
So you were really a true believer there. FFRF started using the slogan Sleeping on Sundays last year after it was deemed too controversial to be placed on buses as part of an ad campaign by the Atheist Foundation of Australia. And we liked the idea of running a message that had been censored elsewhere. Riders of the buses in downtown Chicago will also see 200 interior bus signs, excuse me, with quotations from five famous freethinkers or skeptics from history. Dan, why don't you read a couple of those?
Well, there's some historical ones, but there's some contemporary quotes too. Evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins, who's the author of the blockbuster book The God Delusion, his smiling face is next to one of the famous lines from his book. The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction.
There's the quotation selected for Clarence Darrow, who's the agnostic attorney for the damned with a Chicago connection. He famously represented John Scopes in the 1925 Monkey Trial in Dayton, Tennessee. And Clarence Darrow said, I don't believe in God because I don't believe in Mother Goose. And a poem by Emily Dickinson is featured. Faith is a fine invention when gentlemen can see, but microscopes are prudent in an emergency.
And then there's also a quote by actress Butterfly McQueen. She was famous for her typecast role as Prissy in the 1939 movie Gone with the Wind. She was a nearly lifelong atheist and a lifetime member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. In a 1989 interview on the 50th anniversary of that movie, with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Butterfly McQueen said, and this is the quote on our bus sign, as my ancestors are free from slavery, I am free from the slavery of religion.
And that's a nice Juneteenth quote.
A cryptic quote from Pudd'nhead Wilson by the atheist Mark Twain is also featured on a bus sign. Faith is believing what you know ain't so. And then there's also a sign by Katharine Hepburn. She says, I'm an atheist and that's it. I believe that there's nothing we can know except that we should be kind to each other and do what we can for other people.
And if you happen to be in Duluth, go on vacation there, perhaps keep an eye out for three of FFRF's messages rotating on a digital billboard there. The foundation and its newest chapter, which we're pleased to welcome, the Lake Superior Freethinkers, are jointly sponsoring for a month a digital billboard currently up on Interstate 35 entering Duluth, Minnesota. And the billboard displays three messages in rotation: Imagine No Religion, Beware of Dogma, and God and Government, a Dangerous Mix.
So welcome to the Freedom From Religion Foundation's newest chapter, the Lake Superior Freethinkers. They are at WJOCJ. They were organized in 1997, but they've recently joined the foundation as one of our official chapters. These are what we can call superior freethinkers. They support rational thought, morality without superstition, freedom from religion, and separation of church and state, according to their founder, whose name is William Van Druten. The group's motto is Ecce Homo Sine Superstitione, which is Latin for Behold, Humanity Without Superstition. And the chapter split the costs with the foundation for those billboards.
So thank you, new chapter.
Coming up, we'll talk about Juneteenth and another June 19th event, the 19th anniversary of the Supreme Court's Torcaso decision, affirming there can be no religious test for public office.
I'm Annie Lurie-Gaylor with Dan Barker. We'll be right back for more Free Thought Radio.
This is Dan Fester. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, and I listen to Free Thought Radio, and I think it's great.
Beware of Dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Lurie-Gaylor here with Dan Barker.
And we have on the phone with us from California, Professor Erwin Chemerinsky. We're going to talk about some legal issues today. When I went on the internet to print out Professor Chemerinsky's CV just for a bio, it printed and printed and printed. It was longer than a Supreme Court decision. It would take the whole show just to read it. Erwin Chemerinsky is currently Dean and Distinguished Professor of Law at the University of California, Irvine School of Law. He graduated from Harvard Law School in 1978, cum laude. He was named in 2005 as one of the top 20 legal thinkers in America by Legal Affairs, received numerous honors, including the 2001 Clarence Darrow Award from the People's College of Law, the 2003 President's Award, Criminal Courts Bar Association, and here's a long, long, long list of awards and honors. When our staff attorney, Rebecca Markert, found out we were talking with Professor Chemerinsky today, she came running in. She says, "You're going to have him on the show?" She had a stack of books. She says he has literally written the book on constitutional law, and these are the books... What's the phrase she used? The horn book or something on the books in the law that the students have to know. Professor Chemerinsky's most recent book is called Enhancing Government, Federalism for the 21st Century. That's by Stanford University Press 2 years ago. And of special interest to this discussion and to our issues, Professor Chemerinsky's work on a provision known as the parish exemption. And we're going to let him explain what that is. The Freedom From Religion Foundation, our group, is challenging the parish exemption right now in federal court. And we'll ask Professor Chemerinsky how he came to be asked to render his opinion on its constitutionality in a rather celebrated case at the Ninth Circuit level. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Professor Chemerinsky.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for the incredibly kind introduction.
Now, how can you tell our listeners how you first found out or became involved in this issue of the parish exemption and just what it is?
A number of years ago, there was a case before the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit on a dispute between a very prominent minister, Reverend Rick Warren, and the IRS. And there's a provision of the federal tax code that allows ministers of the gospel to be paid a tax-free housing allowance, that basically they can have their houses deducted from their income taxes. And none of us get that kind of benefit. And there was a dispute between the IRS and Warren over what fell within this housing allowance for ministers of the gospel. And Warren was claiming all of his housing-related expenses, and the IRS was saying he gets only some reasonable amount. And the case was before the Ninth Circuit, and it was called Commission of the IRS versus Warren. And at the oral argument, several judges were asking, how is this constitutional? How can you give ministers of the gospel a tax benefit that no one else can receive? And the judges on their own decided what they wanted to do was appoint a friend of the court to write to them a brief about whether or not this is constitutional. And I received a call from a staff attorney at the Ninth Circuit asking me, would I be willing to be a friend of the court and research this and take a position on whether this is constitutional? I wrote my brief, and a number of organizations, all religious, filed briefs on the other side defending this. Just as I was about to write my reply brief, Congress unanimously adopted a bill to make the Warren case moot. The bill said that for everyone up until then, including Warren, they could take all housing expenses, whether reasonable or not, but in the future, the IRS position would control only reasonable expenses. And the members of Congress said that the purpose of adopting this law was to make moot the Warren case because they didn't want to see churches, synagogues, mosques losing this benefit they could give to their clergy.
The poor guy. You know, I used to take that. I used to be a preacher years ago, and I actually benefited from that law. And I never asked why. I just thought, oh, goody, there's a tax break. I'm going to take it.
And so when that was declared moot, and that was a rather stupendous action by Congress, wasn't it? How quickly they organized this. What did you do?
Well, it happened very quickly. I mean, it was all organized almost instantaneously with the publicity of the Ninth Circuit considering this. And if you go back and you read the statements in the congressional record, one after another said, we need to protect small churches by making sure they can still pay a tax-free housing allowance to their ministers. If I was looking for legislative language that made clearer the violation of the Establishment Clause, the purpose of advancing religion, I couldn't have written statements like this.
The smoking guns.
Exactly. What I did was ask the Ninth Circuit to allow me to intervene and to bring a taxpayer challenge to this provision of law. I said the matter has been fully briefed before the Ninth Circuit. It's an important constitutional issue, and therefore, I should have taxpayer standing to be able to do this. The Ninth Circuit ruled against me. This would have been the fall of 2002, I think, and they said, file your own lawsuit. And I think the Ninth Circuit had no desire to decide a case that they didn't have to decide at that stage.
Hmm. Well, and then you got busy.
I got busy. I moved to North Carolina to take a position at Duke University. I then became a dean of a brand new law school. And so I always had in mind that someday I would file this lawsuit. But there was always a long list of other projects, so I was thrilled when another organization decided to bring the lawsuit.
Yeah, and that would be us, or we,
exactly.
I should say.
Now, if I understand correctly, and maybe you can fill us in on this, wasn't Reverend Warren claiming, you know, getting his church to declare like $80,000 a year as a housing allowance, and that was so excessive that that's what raised the red flags?
That's exactly right. That's what I was saying. And the dispute between the IRS and Warren was how much he could claim as a housing allowance. And when that was before the Ninth Circuit, the judges said, but to allow ministers of the gospel, and that's the exact words used in the statute, a benefit that no one else gets.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Is a violation of the Establishment Clause.
Now, rabbis are included, right? And they're ministers of the gospel.
Absolutely. Ministers of the gospel is non-denominational. And so it would include priests, rabbis, ministers. And there's actually IRS regulations that are quite detailed as to who can get it. So a director of a religious school can't get it, but, say, a cantor in a synagogue can get it.
And I don't think a lot of people realize that cantors are getting can be paid in housing allowances and then not have to pay taxes on that. But there are some really abusive cases where basketball coaches were claiming it, and that was
like
held
at a Catholic high school or something.
Mm-hmm. So,
and there are schools that try to make all of their faculty lay ministers so they can all take this benefit. It's a tremendous amount of money in terms of the federal treasury when you add it up. It is a huge subsidy from the federal government to religion.
With the stated purpose of benefiting religion.
It's amazing to go back and read the legislative history of this. It clearly says that the purpose was to subsidize religion. The most recent incarnation of it was from 1954 and up until the change in this decade. And in 1954, the members of Congress were adopting, saying, now that we're fighting godless communism, we need to really help our ministers and our churches by giving them this tax subsidy.
And to fight atheism.
That's right.
But even going back into the 19, I think it was it 21, the early 1920s when they first did this, the IRS was poised to remove some kind of the parish exemption where you were the churches were providing the housing directly. And Congress took action then too, didn't it?
Yes. I mean, it's the same story. These are laws that were adopted precisely for the purpose of advancing religion. And it's worth making clear why that matters so much. The Supreme Court has said for decades that the government violates the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment if it acts with the primary purpose of advancing religion. There's no way to see this as anything other than the government acting with the purpose of advancing religion.
Now, if we win, how will the typical taxpayer benefit?
Well, I've seen estimates about $500 million a year. And I may have the amount and the duration, but I remember seeing the $500 million figure. And this was in the early part of the last decade, it was around 2001, 2002 when I was briefing this. So in that sense, there's a significant additional financial benefit to the federal budget. The other way in which there's a benefit is we're enforcing a key provision of the Constitution. We're enforcing the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment.
And you would think that conservatives should like this because here's a way to increase revenues without raising taxes.
From some
but
of us.
But it will be, I mean, let's be honest and fair about it. There will be a substantial cost to churches, synagogues, mosques across the country because they're going to need to pay their clergy more in order for the clergy members to end up in the same place financially they are now, given the huge tax benefit.
But that also means that this parish exemption, as we call it, directly benefits various denominations. They don't have to pay their, they don't have to raise as much money. They don't have to pay their employees as much because of this exemption.
That's exactly right.
So that's a really almost a direct subsidy of religion. And you
it
look
is
at it
a
that
subsidy
way.
For religion. Because if you imagine a priest, a minister, a rabbi who's getting paid a certain amount now and has a certain amount of income given the tax benefit, will end up in the exact same place without the tax benefit, they're going to need to be paid a good deal more. And in that sense, it is a subsidy from the federal government directly to faith-based institutions.
And I think this, knowing about the Paris exemption, which I never really was clear on before we investigated this situation, I think I know now why you hear so many ministers, including in the, at least in the past, Reverend Warren, telling people proudly that they don't get paid a salary by their churches. They're getting paid in a housing allowance, and they're just not mentioning that. I think it must be very common.
Well, and of course, when somebody says they're not getting paid a salary, that doesn't account for all of the other things they're getting. They're getting a housing allowance, which is tax-free, which is enormous. I wish I could get paid a tax-free housing allowance. But they also then would get huge expense accounts so that all of the expenses that we incur in our daily life are simply covered for them in that way. It's not that they're working for free.
Yes.
Now, for Reverend Warren, it may be given his income from his book.
Yes.
He really could work for free, but for the average minister or rabbi or priest, if they say they're not getting paid a salary, you need to look at all the other income that they're receiving in other ways.
Well, we'll keep talking about that after the break. We're speaking with Professor Erwin Chemerinsky, who's the dean of the law school at University of California in Irvine, specifically talking about this Paris exemption lawsuit, which the Freedom From Religion Foundation has taken to court. with a lot of input and history and advice from Professor Chemerinsky, and we'll be right back after this.
This is Richard Dawkins, author of The God Delusion. You're listening to Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Lorgeller with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we're very pleased to be speaking with Professor Erwin Chemerinsky, Dean of the University of California Irvine Law School, and a foremost constitutional expert, and we've been talking about the Paris exemption. Do you have any predictions for how you think we'll fare in our lawsuit?
Ultimately, I think it's likely this will go to the Supreme Court. I think that there are 4 votes on the current court to allow almost any government support for religion. That would be Roberts, Scalia, Kennedy, and Alito. I think the question is going to be, what will the more moderate justices do? What will the new Justice Kagan do? What will Justice Sotomayor do? As well as...
Kennedy,
Breyer, right.
Well, you didn't include Thomas in there. Where do you put him?
Didn't I mention Thomas when I said Robert?
I think he did.
You said Roberts Kennedy.
Conservative are Robert, Scalia, Thomas, and Alito.
There you go. Okay.
Now, yep. Kennedy has generally not been a supporter of separation of church and state. Kennedy has generally allowed the government to give aid to religion. And so I think generally when we talk about the Establishment Clause, there are 5 justices who may want to change the law and go a long way to obliterating a wall that separates
right.
church and state. And if that's true, then it doesn't bode well for this. On the other hand, this is so clearly a subsidy just to religion for the reasons we were talking about. It's a benefit that, quote, ministers of the gospel get that nobody else gets. It is a direct subsidy for churches, synagogues, mosques. And hopefully for Justice Kennedy as well as the more moderate liberal justices, this will be deemed objectionable.
Well, he didn't go along with overturning Flast versus Cohen direct taxpayer standing on congressional acts in the Hine decision. I give him credit for not wanting to do that, but who knows? Did you have his vote in the case you argued before the Supreme Court on the Ten Commandments?
This is a case called Van Orden versus Perry that I argued in 2005. It involves a 6-foot-high, 3-foot-wide Ten Commandments monument that sits directly at the corner between the Texas State Capitol and the Texas Supreme Court. And I lost 5-4. The court allowed the Ten Commandments monument. Rehnquist wrote an opinion, joined by Scalia, Kennedy, and Thomas. Breyer concurred in the judgment.
Yeah.
He agreed with the result, but not the reasons, and was the 5th vote to allow it. And I got in the 4 who voted that this would be unconstitutional, Stevens, O'Connor, Souter, and Ginsburg.
Now, Breyer, that was kind of a shock. Were you shocked?
I was. I thought from the time that I wrote my brief, it was going to depend on Sandra Day O'Connor. She was then the swing vote. My brief was a shameless attempt to pander to Justice O'Connor. If I could have put Justice O'Connor's picture on the front of my brief, I would have done so. But it never crossed my mind that I might get O'Connor and then lose because of Justice Breyer.
Do you think that, and Breyer voted correctly in the McCreary case, which was like a twin companion case where the Ten Commandments was inside a courthouse in Kentucky. Do you think that Breyer has regretted his vote?
No.
Oh.
I think Breyer is a pragmatist. And my take on this is that Breyer didn't want the nightly news all over the country to be another small town had to take down a Ten Commandments monument that had been put up there through the money of Cecil B. DeMille. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of these.
But,
and so I think he was drawing a distinction between older ones and newer ones. The Texas one had been there since 1961. No one complained until Thomas Kennedy.
But we had. You see, we had complained. The Freedom from Religion Foundation had officially complained in letters to governors. Our members had complained. And so I felt like, gosh, doesn't he know how hard it is to go against the government? Lots of people are unhappy.
Justice Breyer presents in his opinion that no one had complained until Thomas Van Orden, and obviously that's incorrect. And I think what Justice Breyer was saying is, and the Kentucky displays are new. We don't want any more, but you don't have to take down the old ones. Now, I think that's an absolutely unprincipled distinction. If prohibition of establishment of religion means anything, if you can't have a religious symbol, it literally the seat of state government, and that's what the Supreme Court allowed here.
Well, it was a grave miscarriage. Now, Dan, you had something you wanted to say.
Oh, I just wanted to say, before the break, I wanted to clarify that I had said we had received advice from you. Actually, we had not received any specific advice, but the advice from you was from reading your brief in the parish exemption case. So,
and this is the first time we've had the pleasure of talking with you.
And I hope there'll be many other occasions, too.
And now, what about the general state of the separation of church and state? We have about 2.5 minutes left. Sure. What's your take?
I think it's a bleak time. I think there are likely 5 votes to reject any notion of separation of church and state. As I mentioned, I think here it will be Roberts, Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas, Alito. Mm-hmm. As you know, during the Rehnquist years, Rehnquist, Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas vehemently opposed the idea of a separation of church and state. They said the government should be found to violate the Establishment Clause only if it literally establishes a religion or coerces religious participation. I think there very well may be 5 votes on the court for that position now.
Mm. Yeah, it's very, very grim.
Well, if we lose, couldn't someone like Annie Laurie and I, as atheist leaders of a nonprofit organization, couldn't we claim discrimination? They get a break, but we don't.
Sure, in theory, there is discrimination there. But as you know, justices like Scalia and Thomas have taken the position that the government can advance religion over secularism without violating the Constitution.
Well, I don't know how they get that, looking at the Constitution. But
I think the key to remember is they're reading their values in. I mean, think about Justice Scalia. He says he wants to follow the original meaning of the Constitution. And he finds in the original meaning allowing any government aid to religious schools, any religious symbols on government property. He finds no rights to abortion, no rights for gays and lesbians, no allowance of affirmative action. Unless you believe that the framers of the Constitution and the 2008 Republican Party were identical, which I don't think they were, what it just says is Justice Scalia is reading his own conservative values into the Constitution.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Being a
thank
guest.
Thank you.
Today.
Very nice to talk to you finally.
Good talking to you, and I hope we'll do it again.
Professor Erwin Chemerinsky, Dean of Law at the University of California Irvine School of Law. We also want to thank our producer, Brian Tarani, for doing a wonderful job as always, and engineering, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Listen to archives and podcasts of this show at ffrf.org/radio.
Ask for more information about joining the Freedom From Religion Foundation at 1-800-335-4021 or contact us at ffrf.org. Ask for a complimentary issue of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. We have an update in the upcoming issue on the parish exemption. It was a victory for us to continue with our lawsuit, and you can get more information at our website at any time under news. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday